So 2011, and for some of you, 2011 is like, oh, that's just yesterday. And then others of you who are 14 years old, you're like, 2011, that was like half a lifetime ago for me. But in 2011, there was this wonderfully fantastic commercial that came out, and it was by Volkswagen, and it was a Passat commercial, and they had actually destined that commercial for the Super Bowl, but they did one thing different in 2011, and it hadn't been done before. They actually released the commercial 4 days early before the Super Bowl, and they allowed it to play online, and it did what it was supposed to do. It went viral. It had 17 million hits before the Super Bowl, before it ran in the Super Bowl. That is all unimportant, except for the fact that, you know, kind of why I felt like I connected with that commercial, I feel like is a good starting point today. The commercial had, and some of you may remember this, but the commercial had this little kid. He was probably 5 or 6 years old, and he had gotten this Darth Vader costume. Do you guys remember this one? He'd gotten this Darth Vader costume, and so while he was in this costume, he was kind of going around and trying to use the Force to control things. That's what he was doing. I'm so, oh, jeepers. Okay. He was trying to use the Force to control things. And there he was with his hands. He was trying to control the dog. And so the dog kind of just glances up at him. And then he sits down for lunch. And he does this to the plate, and his mom kind of shoves it over for him, and he's all disappointed because the Force isn't working for him. And then he tries a few more things, and then he sees his dad pull up in the driveway in the Passat. And he goes out, and his dad kind of like goes to give him a little hug, and he kind of like shoves him aside. And then he starts doing this to the car. And his dad goes inside and recognizes what he's doing. His dad goes inside. And with the remote starter, as the kid in the Darth Vader costume is trying to use the Force on the car, hits the button and the car starts and the kid jumps back. Now, I didn't go out and buy a Passat, but I connected with that commercial. And the reason for it is because it took me back to a time in my life where, and I can't remember exactly how old I was. I was probably kind of somewhere between 5 and 7 years old. When either in Sunday school or maybe my mom reading me the Bible or something, I learned that if we have faith that moves mountains, if we have faith the size of a mustard seed, we would be able to move mountains. Well, I figured at that age that my faith was as much as a mustard seed, and so I can actually remember praying that mountains would move. And I don't know if any of you can identify with that at all, actually praying for mountains to move. And thinking, well, maybe it's not quite as big. Maybe my faith isn't quite as big as a mustard seed because the mountain didn't move. And it wasn't until about 4 or 5 years ago when I began to realize, kind of through my faith walk, I began to realize that it's not necessarily mountains that we're moving physically, but there are spiritual mountains that come in our way that need to be moved. And it was kind of about 4 or 5 years ago for the very first time that I had this enormous spiritual mountain ahead of me, one that I was far too exhausted to climb. And I won't go into any detail because I'd break down in front of you today should I talk about it, and I don't want to be a blubbering 46-year-old man standing in front of you. That would do something to my manhood, I'm sure. But I remember thinking, I can't make it through this. I cannot physically make it through this. I am too exhausted in life to make it through this point. And it was God, and so I'm standing in a place today near this black spot here, not moving very far from it. I'm standing in this place today where I get to look back on the last few years of my life, and I get to go, God does move mountains in our lives. By faith, He moves mountains in our lives. And so when I speak to you today, years ago when I would speak, I spoke from kind of this place of idealism. And then God, in the last year, he's said to me, he's kind of put this on my heart. He said, when you're speaking, he said, tell people that you are not speaking from a place of idealism. You are now speaking from a place of brokenness. But brokenness with a vision towards victory. Because in Christ, we have victory. And so he has brought me through this place. He's, as kind of an analogy in faith, he's kind of brought me from a point of kind of that parent where, you know, before you have kids, you kind of read through all the books and you're like, I got this. This is no problem, right? I feel like that's where I used to speak from. And now it's kind of like I feel like the parent who is a little bit haggard and beat up and kind of like multiple sleepless nights, kind of like, you know, through diaper changes, because there are no books, you guys, just in case there are some of you planning to have kids at some point. There are no books that are going to kind of let you in on how foul diaper smells really are. There aren't books that exist for that. It's kind of like when you're in the trenches, when you're there, that's when you see God at work, right? Sorry, you see God at work at other times other than just diaper changes. But that's when you see God at work, when you're kind of walking through life, when it's not just kind of this ideal that's out there, but when you're actually like trudging through life. And that's the point that I believe that he's brought me to, is kind of this kind of like tired parent that is still so proud of his kids, even though through the trials and through the difficulties, I go, there is no possible way that I would turn this in for anything in the world. That's the point that I feel that God has brought me to in this mountain that he has pushed aside or enabled me to climb, however we'd like to look at it. And the cool thing about that is exactly where we end up in the passage that we've been looking at this summer. That is exactly the point that we end up at, because the people that the author of Hebrews is talking about here are people that they're the people that have fought in the trenches. They're the people that have won and lost. They're not just the people that kind of win every time. They're the people that have won and lost. They're the people that have, to use a sports analogy, they're the people that have taken the shot, that final shot of the game and the buzzer beater and missed. And the crowds got on them and like totally tore them apart. And then the next season, they're that same person that came out and wasn't afraid to take that shot again. And they got it that time. And Hebrews 11, that's what this is all about. It's all about the people that don't kind of recoil just because they've had a bad experience or just because life has been tough. They don't recoil. They get back out there and with their faith in God, they go, I'm going to take that shot again. And the writer of Hebrews, he kind of puts this list, right? You know, Abraham and Jacob and Joseph, he kind of puts this list there. And the reason that he puts this list there is because I don't know if you guys pay attention to this, but now that I've had kids, I do pay attention to this. But have you ever noticed how many kids are like out in their driveway playing hockey during like the World Juniors or just after Christmas time? Have you ever noticed that? Or the kids that are out shooting baskets, you know, right around the time that the playoffs are happening? It's because they get inspired by what they see. And that's what the author of Hebrews has done here. He said, get inspired by these people, right? Get inspired by these people. And I'm gonna get you to change slides here. The person up there, if I knew your name, I would use your name. I apologize. The author is saying, he's saying they did it, like these people did it, and so can you. These people did it, and so can you. And the focus passage, which is up there right now, so if you have that, you can go there. We're going to get there in a little bit. We'll go to the next slide. But the main point here that we see is that, and the main point that I'm going to be driving at is that if we actively pursue God and his will, we will develop an unfathomable faith. A deep faith in him, because we see him at work in every circumstance. Now, there is this tipping point, and this is what I'm going to focus on today, is this kind of tipping point, this kind of like we head one way or another. Because there is that side of it. There's kind of like, regardless of the circumstances, we're moving forward because we have faith in God. Because there is faith in things that we cannot see, that we believe that God is in control of. But then there's this dividing line also. And it says, and so we're also going to talk a little bit about, too, the fact that if we allow our human nature to take control, our faith becomes stagnant. And it eventually we become fully reliant on self. So we can go in one of two directions. And as we're kind of diving into the focus passage today, which has to do with the Israelites and kind of their movement, as we're diving into that, let's have a quick look at kind of the bookends for Hebrews 11. So let's go to Hebrews 10, verse 35. Let's just go there for a second, because there is this concept that there are challenges that we cannot overcome on our own. So let's just have a look here. So it says, Hebrews 10:35 says, and this is in the New Living Translation, "Do not throw away this," and remember, this is kind of a bookend. This is kind of like getting us into Hebrews 11. "Do not throw away this confident trust in the Lord, no matter what happens." I love that statement. No matter what happens, don't throw away your trust in God. Allow those things that are happening for you to dig deeper, for you to kind of have this massive trust for the creator of the universe. So don't throw it away, no matter what happens. It says, remember the great rewards it brings you. And then here, 36, patient endurance is what you need now, so you will continue to do God's will. Patient endurance is what you need now so that you will continue to do God's will. Now that patient endurance, that matches up with another word that comes right at the end of at the beginning of chapter 12. Again, we're talking about bookends for chapter 11 here. And so if we go over to chapter 12, it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses, this crowd that we've just talked about, or that we're going to be talking about in chapter 11, it says, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily hinders our progress. And let us run with endurance the race that God has set before us. Let us run with endurance. And then in verse 10, or in chapter 10 here, it says patient endurance. Now, if you look at that word endurance in the NIV, it uses perseverance. And if you look at those words, endurance and perseverance, they both contain this Latin root differently, but they both contain this kind of this idea of challenge within them. So perseverance, the Latin root of that means severe. It actually means thoroughly severe. It means that you're going to have to endure very difficult times in order to persevere through something. And then endurance at its core means hard or in hard. It means difficult. And so here, what the author is doing is he's kind of saying there are things that there are insurmountable challenges that are going to happen in life. There are these difficult challenges that are going to happen that you are going to need to persevere through, that you are going to need to endure through these difficulties and these challenges. Now, It's at this concept of challenge. What makes it so challenging? And there's kind of two things that make it so challenging. Now, one is that there are just, and some of you can attest to this, actually probably most of you can attest to this, that there are things in life that are just like, that we wouldn't choose for anything in the world. There are challenges that we can go through in life that we just wouldn't choose for anything in the world. And yet they're kind of put there before us. And we have to do something with them. We have to do something with them. We can't just ignore the fact that it's there. And so kind of that's one of the reasons that we need endurance or patience. or persistence and perseverance. And then the other has to do with not what's outside, but with what's inside. And that's our own humanness. Our own humanness causes us to do one of two things. Our own humanness can cause us to look at that challenge and go, I can't do it. I cannot do that. And then the other thing that we can do when we see that challenge, and what this faith concept, this faith chapter is challenging us to do, is to go, when our human nature steps in and says, I'm going to avoid that or sidestep that, it's saying, hey, there's one other option. The other option is this. What about trusting the creator of the universe? What about trusting Jesus Christ? What about placing your trust in him and seeing what he can do through you in this situation? What about that option? And when I think of that, I think of this one analogy where this was much earlier on in life. I was probably in my late teens or early 20s. And if you can go to the next slide. This is probably late teens or early 20s, and I was hiking this mountain here, and actually, it's kind of funny, but the peak is off the top. That's kind of cool in this picture, but I was hiking this peak here. It's called Fisher Peak, and it's near where I grew up, and it's kind of one of those ones that as you're growing up, you're kind of staring at it all the time and going, one day I will climb that. Anyways, I had gone up with a friend who knew the trail, because there wasn't much of a trail, and especially when it gets to the very steep part near the top, it's a lot of kind of handholds, and you can do it without ropes, but it's kind of handholds, and that you lose the trail, and you kind of, you know, more route finding as you get up near the top. And we had made it, we had got up early that morning. It was about a 5-hour slog up this mountain, and we got to the top, and we sat there, and we kind of wrote in the logbook, you know, something philosophical that you do once you kind of accomplish some type of a challenge like that. And so we were sitting at the top, and there was another group that had come up. And so we chatted with them for a bit. And then my buddy and I, we were leaving, and kind of, I would say, it was probably about 100 meters from the top, actually, probably just where the slide cuts off there. We got down this one part, and it's kind of notoriously the most difficult portion of that climb. It's where you actually have to pull yourself up over this one boulder, and as you're pulling yourself up, your feet are actually dangling out into the middle of kind of this abyss, kind of into nothingness. And so it really does something to your insides. And as we got to that boulder, we got down on the other side of it, and there was a lady that was like just kind of shaking, sitting there. And so my buddy and I, we were talking to her, like, are you okay? Is everything okay? Yes, I'm just going to sit here, she said. I'm just staying here. My group went on ahead, and they left me here. And we said, oh, you're really close to the top. And she said, no, that's okay. I'm going to stay here. This is good. I'm just staying here. And we said, but you're so close. Like you've come like 4.5 hours, and really there's only like maybe 10 or 15 minutes, maybe not even that, up to the top. We said, what about if we help you? Like, can we help you through this portion? I said, because really once you do this, like one of us will stand at the bottom, the other will stand at the top, and we'll like pull you up, and then you'll be on your way. You can meet your group at the top. And so she ended up deciding that's what she would do. And so we did. We helped her past that point, and then we headed down. I hope she found the rest of the way to the top after that. Some analogies break down after a while. But when I think about these moments in life where we're kind of called to this, or we end up at this one point where we either hunker down and we're like, enough is enough. I'm done. I can't do this anymore, God. I can't make this decision. I can't head out from here. And let's use some really practical analogies as I'm looking over in this direction. If I go out in this direction, do I have to, you know, am I choosing between this school and this school? that's too tough of a decision. Am I choosing between this program and this? That's too tough of a decision. I'm just going to stay here. Or maybe for others of you, maybe for new parents, it's kind of like you're holding on so tight to your kids, and there's this still small voice that's saying, okay, you got to give them to me. You got to give your kids to me. Because I've got huge plans for them, and you get to be a part of that, but you got to give them to me. Or maybe it's a huge decision too. Maybe some of you are in a place right now where you're having to decide whether, you know, you'll take a job and it'll take you away from town. It'll take you away from your family. Maybe that's the decision right now and you're just feeling like, I can't even do it. I can't make that decision. There are these massive decisions that we have to make in life. And by faith, God calls us to him and says, let me take that. Put your eyes here. Put your eyes on me. Because you can't do this alone. Because if you think you can do this alone, this is where you'll end up. Hunkered down. You'll end up hunkered down, relying on self. And then it's not always just those big decisions either. It's not just those big ones. I think of, usually a few times a week, I'm kind of out hiking around the falls just because there's some nice hills and stuff around there. And when I head out across the suspension bridge, it usually kind of, you know, if I've been across five times in the last couple weeks, usually there's kind of like two or three people that I run across that get to the point on the suspension bridge where they can look through, and I don't know why they're staring down at the river, but they can, sorry, I'm missing the spot again, where they can look through, and below them is just, you know, the bank has just kind of gone away, and it's just kind of nothing down there, right? And they stop. That's far enough. I can't go any farther. So they'll stop there. And I think of that for little decisions, right? For little decisions that we make. And the little decisions that we make, they require faith as well. There are little decisions like, are we going to reach out and help somebody that God has put on our heart? Or are we not? Are we just going to go, no, God's not really talking to me about that? Or are we going to make a meal for somebody where God is kind of like, they're a neighbor that you don't really know all that well, but you've heard around the neighborhood that maybe they've just gone through, maybe something really difficult. Maybe they've gone through a divorce, or maybe they've, you know, lost a child, or something like that. And God has put it on your heart to bring a meal over for them. And inside you're kind of like, no, I don't really know them all that well, and so I'm not going to do that. And so you kind of, there are these little decisions too. It's not always just the big ones, but there are these little decisions that we make as well, where God calls us to be obedient and to step out past the point of our comfort. Because the more kind of we get to that point where we're just like, no God, the more we get to that point where we're not relying on faith, we get to that point where we're kind of like, no, I got this one, God. We become very self-reliant. And we start to walk through life kind of with our self-reliance. And Hebrews 10, verse 39 says something very interesting about that. In the NIV, Hebrews 10, verse 39 says, make sure that we're not part of those who shrink back and are destroyed. Make sure that we're not those that are shrinking back in the face of challenge. Because if we're shrinking back, then we're not doing what we're called to do, which is trust God beyond what we can see. And so he talks about that in self-reliance. Let's go to Hebrews 11, verse 29. Let's go to Hebrews 11, verse 29. Because there's something that we learn about kind of this point where we can go either way as far as our faith, as far as those decisions that we're making. And here we learn it from the people of Israel. And it says this, It says, Hebrews 29, this is our focus passage. It says, it was by faith that the people of Israel went right through the Red Sea as though they were on dry ground. But when the Egyptians followed, they were drowned. And then verse 30, it says, it was by faith that the people of Israel marched around Jericho 7 times or for 7 days, and the walls came crashing down. So what we can learn from, what we can learn directly from these passages here, point number one in the three things that we can learn from this passage is just because we're moving along God's path doesn't mean that life is going to be easy. And we kind of have that, don't we? Because it's a huge desire. Think about it. We want life to be easy. We do. Or I do. Sorry, I may have just admitted to something where you guys are like, no. But we want life to be easy. And we have to note that just because we're heading down a path that God has called us to doesn't make it easy. I wish I had, I'm going to sound old here, but I wish I had a dime for every time a student came back and said, oh, I thought that God was calling me down that path. But it was really hard. And so he obviously wasn't calling me to that. Well, no, he was calling you to that. He's calling you to endure difficult times as your faith grows, right? To endure that. So we learn this from this story of the Egyptians because as they leave Egypt, and it says that God, so they've seen miracles as they're leaving Egypt. They've seen these miracles of, you know, the plagues, and they've seen God just do these miraculous things so that they'll be able to leave. And then they head out, and it says that God hardens Pharaoh's heart. If you look in, if you want to read kind of more into this passage, if you look at Exodus 14 and 15, actually, we're going to talk about Exodus 15 today as well. But if you look at that, it says that God actually hardens Pharaoh's heart, and then he goes out after the people that he has let go. He goes out after them. And it's interesting because they're heading out in the direction. They're heading out by faith. They're leaving one place and they're moving to another. And they're heading out by faith. But it's not easy. What they're doing is not easy. And the same thing with the people with the Israelites that are marching around Jericho. You want to talk about a time lapse. The time lapse between verse 29 and verse 30 is 40 years. Because their faith waned in God. They wandered around in the desert. And it wasn't for 40 years until they believed that until the older generation has passed through and the younger generation is coming up, where they believe that they can actually go into the promised land. And Jericho is the first challenge that they have to conquer as they go into the promised land. That's 40 years. Just because we're going off in a direction that God has called us to does not make it an easy direction. So that's point number one. Point number two is that all the challenges that we face are going to drive us in one of two directions, either away from God away from God and towards self-reliance, or toward God and a deeper faith in Him. So as our faith kind of increases, as we're making our decisions to go in a direction that God has called us to, that's kind of the direction that we desire to go, or that our souls are desiring to go. Our self-reliance is the other direction. And we see this in both passages, again, both in Exodus 14 and 15. We see this where as the people leave, and as they get, and they're kind of hemmed in by the Egyptian army, what we see is that people start to complain. So even though they see God do great things in kind of the leaving, they start to complain. Why have you brought us here? They say to Moses. Why did you bring us out here? We'd rather be back in Egypt, where at least we had food on our plates. Here, We don't know where it's coming from. So they start to complain. The complaining is kind of us turning to self rather than turning to God. That's an example of that. And then two, with Joshua and Jericho, we also see that even it was directly right after kind of the walls come down, after they've marched around Jericho and the walls come down, they've been given strict instructions not to take anything. And one guy, what does he decide to do? He falls in love with a Babylonian bathrobe, of all things. I don't have an affinity for bathrobes, so I have no clue what this guy was thinking. But he sees this bathrobe and a little bit of, you know, money, and he takes them, even though he's been instructed not to, even though he's seen this absolutely amazing, this amazing sight before him where God is at work. He decides to head out in his own direction, and he takes that. And as a result, we see in the next chapter, as a result, we see that that there are 34, I believe, warriors that end up dying in the next battle as a result of a decision for him, because he took a bathrobe and some gold that he was instructed not to take. So, the next point, this is kind of the third of the trifecta here, and we'll stop and I'll go to the conclusion after this one. But the next one is that trusting God's plan for our life fosters a belief in the mystery of God. It fosters a belief in the mystery of God. And I love that idea, because we tend to lose. In our reductionistic culture, where we get to break everything apart, where we get to go, well, we can kind of, you know, take all these parts away and figure everything out. Our minds end up a little bit like that as well, where we want to kind of reduce, and we want to reduce God and kind of figure everything out. But with the faith, but as God calls us to this faith and calls us to this place where he's desiring that we trust him, we actually get to this place where we begin to go, my goodness. This God that I serve is way bigger than I ever could have imagined. This God that I serve is so mysterious, and I love him all the more for it, because I don't get it. I don't get him all the time. I don't understand him all the time. There are certain aspects, yes, that I do understand, his love and his forgiveness. I understand those things, but I just don't understand how vast and how great those are. And so we start to see that as well. We start to see that, and where we see that is especially in Exodus 15. Exodus 14 is kind of this is how it happened. This is how my people left Egypt. And then Exodus 15 is this wonderful poetic rendering of how they left. And I love this kind of mysterious concept because remember, the people of Israel, they walk through on dry ground. They walk through the Red Sea on dry ground because the waters part for them. And Exodus 15, in this poetic version, it explains it this way. It says, by his nostrils, don't you love that? By his nostrils, you can tell that I'm a high school teacher, right? Because if I was teaching high school kids, they'd be like so fascinated with nostrils. Anyways, by his nostrils, the waters piled up. So with a blast of his nostrils, the waters piled up and they walked through. Now I grew up on this kind of pretend farm. My parents called it a hobby farm. And so I've seen powerful nostrils at work. Anybody that's grown up on any type of a ranch or a farm knows exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about the farmer's blow. Sorry, you guys are all West Coasters. You guys have no clue, right? Or the fisherman blow out here. Yes, it's the one, it's holding onto the one nostril while you release with the other. It's kind of the paperless culture, kind of a predecessor of the paperless culture, right? We're on the farm, it's like, oh, I forgot my hanky. Which, what's up with the hanky, by the way? I'm sorry, but there are some things that I'm so glad that they did not transcend kind of culture, right? When I say, I'm sorry, I apologize, because there are some of you here that probably have a hanky. I'm just like, when my dad would pull out his hanky, I'd just be like, oh, Dad, where are you going to put that after you blow? Oh, I see, back in your pocket. I certainly hope that you don't pull candies out of there. Anyways, totally sidetracked. Back on the black spot. Okay. By his nostrils, the waters piled up. Belief in the mysterious nature of God. We can study him our whole lives. And some of you will. Some of you young people will go on to be theologians. Some of you will. And my belief after these years that I've lived is that even if you study him your entire life, you will still not fully understand the mysterious nature of God, because it is too large for us to understand. It is too beautiful for us to fully comprehend this mysterious nature of God. And so by his nostrils, the waters pile up. And so let us live that. Let us live that concept that when we can't see a way, when we've been hemmed in and we can't see a way, and we call out to God, that we trust that he will answer. And even if it's not the way that we want him to answer, we will trust that he will answer nonetheless. I'm going to end with this little analogy, because I think that dividing point that we've been talking about today, where we're either kind of like trusting God in faith to bring us through these situations, or we're kind of like hunkering down and we're like, nope, I'm stopping here. This is as far as I go on the suspension bridge. This is it. There's the end point, but here I'm stopping. We have to be really in tune with Christ in our lives. Like daily meeting with him. We have to be that in tune with him. I think of this story that my friend Jesse told me about his kid who accepted Christ at a very young age. He was 5 years old. Some of you in here probably accepted Christ at that age. But he was 5 years old. And somewhere around kind of 5 and 6, he was watching an Easter special with his father, with Jesse. And as they were watching this Easter special, where whoever it was that was portraying Christ was on the television screen, my friend Jesse looked over at his son, and he saw his son was in tears. And he said, "Son, why are you crying?" And he said, "Dad," he said, because you told me that when I accepted Christ in my heart, that he would never leave here. And he's not here, he's there. And I think of that. And it's by faith that Christ is here. And our human nature, it desires to do this. It desires to pull us apart from our belief in Christ and our faith in Christ. Our human nature desires to do that. And we need to be as sensitive as Jesse's son. In other words, sometimes we're walking along, and sometimes we've traveled an entire mountain, or sometimes we've traveled an entire path, or sometimes we've accomplished a great distance. And something happens and we go, "Oh my goodness. I left God behind a long time ago." So let it not be that. Let it not be where we've accomplished much, or where we've gone a vast distance, where we go, "Oh my goodness, I left my faith behind a long time ago." Let us be wary that it is through perseverance and endurance and digging in that our relationship with God, with Jesus Christ, flourishes, because we see him at work in every circumstance. Let us be that sensitive where we go, "He's there, not here." Because when we're that sensitive, we begin to have this, Christ begins to have this, this impact within us that just can't help but spill over. And so now the difficult part. I had to ask myself this before this message, but now the difficult part. Where are you? Where are you on that spectrum? Where are you in this passage? If I was honest with myself, the last few years, I was part of the contingency that was complaining a lot. Moses, why did you bring us here? Why? I was part of that contingent. And so I think that this begs some self-reflection. Are you recoiling at challenges that are placed before you because you don't fully trust what God can do? Are you recoiling? Or are you looking at God and saying, God, let's do this. Let's make this happen. I don't know how, but as I travel in the direction that you desire that I go, you will ensure that the people that need to join me will join me. The people that need to support me will support me. And though I get beat down, you will pull me back up. So where are you? It's a tough question. It's a really tough question. Because once you've answered it and been completely honest, it requires you to do something with your faith. It requires you to either move in the direction that God has called you, and maybe he called you there 15 years ago, I don't know. Or it requires you to endure or to stay steadfast. Maybe you're being pounded kind of in a way that Captain America often gets pounded and you have your shield up. But you're steadfast and you're enduring your faith, or with faith you're enduring. Maybe you're there. Maybe God is doing a work in you and you're feeling like you've accomplished the mountain that he has asked you to climb. And you're feeling like so built up in your faith. And if you are there, I encourage you to become built up in your faith and not built up in yourself. Because human nature, our humanness, it knows no boundaries. It won't stop. Just because we've accomplished through Jesus Christ, it's not going to stop. So let us fix our eyes on him. Let us endure. Let us be so dug into his will that he is leading us through every step. Let us walk that path. Let's pray.